You're listening to a DM podcast.
If in the event that your wife ever gets pregnant a second time and she's giving birth, may I suggest that you play that song, Push It? By Salt and Pepper. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a new episode of Mr. A+. Joining us today is an Australian actor and musician who was a cast member of one of Australia's longest-running soap operas for 4 years, 2004 to 2008. He recently claimed that he and his partner are huge fans of me on Instagram. That's very kind of them. They even have some big news to reveal too. Now, let's all give a warm welcome for fellow Aussie, Mark Furze.
Hey!
AKA Rick Dalby.
Hi, mate. How are you?
I'm going well, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm good. That was a really nice introduction, man. If you could follow me around and do that for me all the time, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, wouldn't that be something?
Have a hype man just following you all the time. That'd be great.
Yeah. So, first off, how are you doing and your family?
We're good, man. Yeah, thanks for asking. I'm really well. My family and I have my wife, and we have a little 15-month-old girl, and we've recently moved from Sydney to the Gold Coast up in Queensland.
So I've been told.
Yeah. So we've been here for nearly 6 months, a bit more than 6 months. So it's all been a bit of a whirlwind, all that kind of business. And we've got our two little doggies as well. Life's good, man. We're really happy up here. We're kind of doing the whole domestic family thing. We got a backyard, lots of grass for our little girl to run around on, and yeah, mate, we're great. How are you? How's your family?
My family's doing quite well, thanks, and I'm doing pretty well too. Still getting through life as it happens.
Yep. It's all you can do.
Still looking forward to pursuing acting.
Should we talk about that?
Sure.
I was very intrigued to find out that you're an actor, man. That's really exciting. I would love to see you in some things, playing some roles. I saw your speech at your brother's wedding, and I was really impressed, mate. I was cracking up. You did a wonderful job. Well done.
Thanks, Mark. Apparently, my speech was the best one at the wedding.
Of course, it was. I'm not surprised. I didn't even need to see the others to know that.
Yeah, I was even told by several people the whole night that I was given compliments by people the entire night.
Yeah, well, it's deserved, man. So I've been best man 2 times now,
and it's, seriously,
yeah, it's which is a real privilege, as I'm sure you know, to be considered the best man at someone's wedding. But it's a big stress too. Hey,
I would say that it is.
Yeah, I was so. Obviously, you know, someone asks you to be the best man, you're like, wow, this is amazing. And then you realize, oh, shit, I've got to do a speech. And then the stress kicks in. And, of course, you can't screw up the speech, you know. You've got to make a really good speech. And you did a good job. Were you nervous about it?
Not really.
You didn't look nervous. You crushed it.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, man.
At least I managed to get some laughs out of people.
Yeah, you got heaps. It was really funny. Have you ever considered writing your own character? Like characters for you?
I haven't.
I think you'd be pretty good at it.
I don't even know how to start.
Yeah, well, I know that feeling. It's a stressful thing, but I think the thing is with that kind of thing, my philosophy on it is just do it and have it be terrible and then learn from how terrible it is and make the next one a little bit better and then the next one a little bit better. And then you'll go, before you know it, you've written 5 characters or 5 stories, and the 5th one's going to be way better than the first one. But you've still got to embrace failing and being terrible, because trust me, I've written my fair share of terrible, terrible stories and characters.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
In fact, when I posted that the best man speech on Instagram, it's now received like 100,000 views.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And a lot of the comments mention a lot about comic timing.
Yes, I noticed that too. And that's not an easy thing to get right. Because if you wait a little bit too long to tell a joke, or you come in too fast, or you don't, you know, for instance, what you were doing, people were clapping and laughing, and you gave it time. You sat, you waited till they finished, because you're like, I got another joke to tell, and I want you all to hear it. It was really good. Yeah. You did well. That's just obviously Thanks. It's instinct, man. You did great.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate that. Being the best man was kind of an honor, I suppose.
Yeah.
Truth be told, I never really pictured myself being anyone's best man. Not to mention having to drain yourself of money on the groom.
Yes, right. Exactly. Exactly. Did you get them a nice present?
Well, they just wanted cash.
They wanted cash. Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess that's
fair. That was
enough.
Mostly what they wanted. Anyway, I need to ask you, can you describe how you entered the world of acting?
I can, mate. Yeah. So I actually began acting quite young. My first acting role was, I believe I was 10. My father always did musical theatre. So he was up on stage singing and performing. And I would always see him in these musical theatre productions, and I thought it was fantastic. I guess I was full of confidence at the age of 10 and auditioned for a musical that my dad was going to be in. It was local musical theatre in the town that I grew up in. And I got the part. So I was like the lead role. There was the musical Oliver. Have you heard of that one?
I don't think I have.
It's a famous old musical. And So I got the lead role in that, and that's where it all started. I was 10. So I pursued it from there. From 10 years old.
That's like, wonderful news.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty young. And obviously at 10, you don't really know what you're doing. You don't really know who you are or what's going on. You just kind of go with the flow. Mm-hmm. And I managed to get very lucky and get a lot of opportunities as a young person.
That's really impressive. Did your parents encourage your pursuit of acting?
Yeah, absolutely. They did. I think that my dad kind of secretly wanted to be an actor when he was a young bloke. But, you know, it was a different time when he was a young man, and his father very much encouraged him to go to university and, you know, get his college degree and finish school and all this stuff. And
yes. That is so typical of that generation.
It is, mate.
One of your sons and daughters to go to university, get a degree, and then get themselves a real job.
That's exactly right, mate. That was exactly the path that my dad's dad encouraged for him, and he did it. He was very diligent. He was a dentist, and he's recently retired, but he was a dentist his whole life. But he always wanted to be an actor. There was a part of him that wanted to be an actor, and so he was always, when I said, Dad, I think I want to be an actor, he was very supportive of me, and so was my mum. My mum was always great with it too, so I was lucky in that sense. It's a tough industry, but yeah, my folks were very supportive.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
How about your folks? Are they behind you wanting to do some acting?
Well, they both are. Well, when I was a kid, that's when I decided that I wanted to pursue acting. My father always encouraged me to pursue it, but my mother somewhat discouraged me because she didn't think I would have a chance of getting into the industry. But it wasn't until Love on the Spectrum that she began to change her mind about it.
Sure. Yeah, well, that makes sense. And I get it. It's really hard. It's a very difficult industry. Let's say if you're a plumber and you fix someone's toilet, or you fix a sink and you do a really good job, people are going to go, that's a great plumber. I'm going to use him again. And they're going to write reviews and they're going to say good things. In the acting world, it doesn't work like that. If you're a really good actor, that doesn't mean you're going to get the job. Quite often it's about how famous you are, or how many people you know, or who you know, how you look. And then it depends on the acting quality. It's all the reality of the industry is a tricky one, man.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's not about what you know, it's about who you know.
That's it, mate. That's exactly right.
Another thing about actors is that they don't need a paper resume. All they need is a showreel.
Yeah, you're totally right. You're totally right.
But also at the same time, in terms of comedy, Australia needs to do better.
Oh, man, I completely agree.
And use American shows as example.
I totally agree with you on that front. Yeah, the Americans... There's so much comedy out there, films, TV, and the Aussie stuff. It just seems to not quite hit the mark, which is weird because I feel like we're a pretty funny culture.
Yes, that's right. When Australia does drama, it reminds me so much of reality.
Yeah, that's true. It can be quite dark, can't it?
Yeah.
I've found from watching some great Aussie films that I leave the film going, wow, that was so real. I feel like I've just lived some of the worst parts of somebody else's life. You know what I mean? You leave and you feel like, wow, did I have a good time then? Or was that just really morbid? So I know what you mean.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
That also does remind me, can you tell us about your time on Home and Away, how you were cast and the reason you departed the show?
Yeah, so I had an acting agent from a young age when I was about 13 or 14.
Yeah.
And she would send me on auditions for things and I got an audition. I was living in Orange, so Central West, New South Wales, so about 4 hours drive from Sydney. The audition was in Sydney, so I was a country kid, drive up to Sydney with mum and dad, did the audition. And they liked me. Basically, that's how it went. I did a few auditions and got a few callbacks. And then I ended up getting the part right when I was doing, it was year 12. So the final year of school.
Yeah. That would have been 2004.
04. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. So I finished high school in 04. But I left, I wasn't there for a good 6 months because I was a guest character. And then I left to do my high school certificate. And then the day after I finished my last exam, I moved to Sydney to start full-time on Home and Away. And then I was there for 4 years.
Yeah, that would have been about 19 years ago to, and then 2008 was 15 years ago.
15 years ago when I finished. I'm glad you did the math for me, mate. I'm terrible at maths. Yeah, so what was the other part of your question? Why did my character leave? Well, it was, my contract was up and there was the option to stay on the show, to keep going. But I was excited for some more adventures in life. I was, 18, 19, 20, 21. So that's how old I was throughout the years of the show. And at 21, 22 years old, I wanted to go out and explore the world. I wanted to go to the States and see if I could do some acting in the US. I'm also a musician and started some, wanted to play in my band. And I had a lot of adventuring to do, really. So my time in Summer Bay came to an end.
Where's Summer Bay?
It's not a real place, but it's a fictional coastal suburb? Town. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's probably somewhere between Sydney and the Gold Coast. Like, you know what I mean? Oh. Like, it's somewhere there. If you know anything about Summer Bay and Home and Away, you'll know that people tend to get sick an awful lot in Summer Bay. There are murderers that go through there. There's gangs. There's all kinds of crazy drama that happens. So I wouldn't move to Summer Bay because it seems like a very dangerous place.
Clearly.
Yeah. So it's probably a good thing that it's not a real place because it would be somewhere to steer clear of due to all the illness and danger. But it makes for good TV. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But what is the point of entertaining people with a show that's very similar to reality?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I feel like, I guess some people like that. I guess some people like something that is really hyper real because it feels like they can get more immersed in the show. I think they can connect with it more. And then there's other people who like something that's pure fantasy. So they get an escape from their real world. What kind of thing do you like to watch?
Well, I'm actually more into sitcoms and animation and comedy as well.
Cool.
The only things I don't watch are anything that's in horror, suspense, slasher, or thriller.
Oh, really? And wow.
I'm also not really into action films or action thrillers that much at all.
Yeah, that's funny. See, I really like thrillers. I didn't used to. Horror films and thriller films. I don't like the slasher ones that are just violent for the sake of it. But what I like about thrillers and those kind of movies is it makes me feel alive. You know, it's very intense and quite stressful, but you're safe. You know, you're in the movie theater or you're in your home and you're not in danger, but you get the thrill of feeling like there's danger without actually being in danger. So that's what I like about it, mate. I finish watching a thriller movie and I feel very alive and excited.
Yeah. I've never even seen any James Bond films in my life except for Die Another Day, but only for one reason.
Yeah.
Because it was the film debut of Rosamund Pike, who's one of my favourite British actors. She was also in Gone Girl and...
That's right.
Wobby Dinner Holiday, Hector in the Pursuit of Happiness.
Yeah, yeah.
The Wheel of Time.
Okay, cool. So you're following her career.
Yeah.
Are you thinking that you might have to start watching some dramas and thrillers?
Nope. I'm actually mostly big on comedy because I consider myself to be mostly a comedic actor.
Sure.
Although I do see myself as also versatile as well.
Yeah, well, that's good to be. I think that's a healthy thing to know what you like and to know what you're good at. What kind of comedic actors do you look up to?
Oh, ones like Phil Hartman and the people that were on Saturday Night Live, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and Parks and Recreation, The Office. I look at a lot of those American sitcoms because they're comedies mostly and because they just keep me entertained.
Yeah, yeah, they do well with those. Did you like the British version of The Office, the original one?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it? It's different to the American one. It's more subtle, but I'd be intrigued to know if you like it. If you like the American one, it'll be interesting to know if you like it because it is quite different.
But I also have recently begun to develop an interest in David Attenborough's nature documentaries.
Oh, yeah, I love those, man. Those are amazing.
Yeah, certainly are. Animals and their habitats, do you know what they all have in common?
Hit me.
All of that is purity.
You're totally right. There's no bullshit with animals. Little kids and animals, you're totally right. It is completely pure and there's a lot of instinct. And there's something really beautiful about observing that.
Animals are far more well-behaved than humans.
That's true, man. I got into... The Flintstones, when I was a kid, I remember that being on TV, and the Jetsons, those two were on TV, and a bit of Yogi Bear. You know, a lot of cartoons these days are either just for children or just for adults.
Yeah.
Whereas the Hanna-Barbera days was much more wholesome, so I can see why you like
it. Yeah, that's right. It's something that people of all ages can enjoy.
What about modern animation? Do you like things like Rick and Morty?
Actually, I got out of that 2 years ago.
Did you?
I consider adult animation to be quite vulgar.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it really is. They really lean into that, don't they?
But one of the modern shows I really love is SpongeBob SquarePants.
Okay. Yes, SpongeBob is a crazy show, man.
It is. It's just entertaining. And it's something that people of all ages can enjoy too.
Yes. Yeah. It works for all ages. I like that show.
I have to ask you, how and when did your musical career begin and how you landed on The Voice?
Yeah. Okay. So my musical career, I would say, is something that I've actually been doing more than I've done acting. I just happened to get more acting work and acting roles. So I was always singing and playing instruments as a child, but I didn't discover the guitar until I was 16. My parents bought me a guitar at 16, and because I was listening to a lot of AC/DC and a lot of rock and roll. Do you like rock music?
Not really. I'm only into pop music.
Pop music. Okay. So no Black Sabbath.
Afraid not.
Okay, look, that's all right. We can still be friends. I'll let that one slide.
Yeah, that music difference doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. There's many other reasons to be friends. Yeah, so I was playing guitar at 16 and now my full-time job is a musician. I do acoustic solo stuff in bars and pubs and I do like 3, sometimes 4 gigs a week and I sit and I play guitar and
Whoa.
And it's a cool way to make some money and keep my playing up, my quality up high. And yeah, man, it's a good thing. And I've got my own original music called Stone Love, which is a rock band. I'm in a covers band as well. I've just joined a covers band up here in Queensland called the Filthy Animals. And we play like classic rock songs. My music career has been something that's always been happening. And it's something that I really love and will never stop doing. You asked about The Voice. Yeah, so that was in 2020, which was of course, you know, the year of the pandemic.
So that's something I generally don't talk about on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a very fun thing to talk about.
Yes, yeah, it affected me too.
Yeah, it really did, man. It was rough. But so we started the show, and then all the lockdowns happened. So we almost didn't even finish the show, but they managed to keep the show going, but without an audience. So we were in the studio singing, and they had screens around us with people on the screens to make it look like kind of simulate an audience. But it wasn't the same, unfortunately.
It wouldn't be.
No, that feeling of being on stage and performing to people singing and having them with their response, cheering, clapping, enjoying it. It's a very electric, intense feeling, and it's not quite the same when there's no audience there.
It wouldn't be. In fact, I hardly ever go to concerts, to be honest.
You know what? If I'm honest, I don't go to many concerts these days either. I've gotten a bit old when it comes to that kind of thing.
How are you old? You're only 36.
That's true. That's a good point. I guess I just feel like I'm old because I've got a child at home and she's waking up in the night, so I'm always tired. So when it comes to going out watching a concert, I'm like, oh, 8:30, time for bed.
Yeah. In fact, whenever I go to concerts, I always have earplugs in. It minimizes the noise because being on the spectrum, I cannot tolerate loud noises.
Yeah, okay. So is that something that gets a bit full on for you? Lots of sound? Yeah,
it does.
That's definitely the case for me, at least with concerts. I've always got earplugs in. I don't care if people think it's not cool. It's too much.
Well, who cares about being cool?
That's right. That's right. I reckon we make it cool to wear the earplugs because when we're 50, we're not going to be deaf or have tinnitus and ringing in our ears all the time. That's much cooler.
Exactly. It's cool. It's called prioritizing your ear health.
Yeah. How is auditory health not a cool thing?
What is cool?
Now, that's a question that I don't think ever will be answered.
I don't think it should be.
No. Nah.
There are some questions that should never have an answer.
Yeah. It's kind of like, what is the meaning of life?
Or what the meaning of normal is.
Yeah. What the meaning of normal? Yeah, well, that's it. That's just constantly changing, isn't it?
I know. And anyway, I have at least three more questions for you.
Hit me.
I hear you have your own podcast like I do, right?
Correct.
What is yours about and where can people find it?
So, thank you for asking. My podcast is called Deep and Meaningfuls with Furzy, and it is basically that. It's me having deep and meaningful conversations, kind of like what we're doing right now. I like to just explore things that are a little bit below the surface or a lot below the surface. You know,
it's down to that.
Yeah, you know, it's nice to have a little conversation with someone, but I really get a lot more out of diving into things a lot deeper and kind of just finding out what the truth is. And even though sometimes it can be uncomfortable, it can be tricky, but I think that's how you really bond with people and how you really learn about yourself is to go into things that are a little uncomfortable sometimes. And that's how you learn things, I think, when you go into the shadows, you know, that's where the good stuff is. Even though it's a bit scary, you come out stronger. So, yeah, it's a podcast about just deep conversations. I talk to people from all walks of life, really. I'm intrigued about all kinds of stuff. So I've taken a bit of a break from it since I became a dad, and I've been putting all my energy into doing my best to being a very present and attentive dad. But now my little girl's she's getting a little bit more she's a little bit able to, you know, wander around and she doesn't need quite so much attention. So I'm starting the podcast back up again, and
that's cool.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent. I don't think that's something Rick Dalby would have ever been able to do.
I don't think so either. Like, Rick Dalby was a bit of a troubled lad. He did his best, but I think Rick Dalby had some real demons that he would need to maybe even go and see a psychotherapist about and talk about some things that happened in his childhood, because he had a hard time.
Maybe because he had a shit father.
I mean, that's really hit the nail on the head. His father was a bit shit, a lot shit, actually. Isn't it amazing how having a shit father seems to be a big reason why a lot of people are messed up?
It's like the worst thing for a kid.
Yeah, it really
having
is.
A shit dad.
Mm. And it's funny, like from listening to psychologists and understanding about why people have issues, it turns out a lot that like all a father really needs to do is just be there, you know, be there yeah. and be present. So it's they don't really need a lot. I mean, I'm lucky; I got a wonderful dad. He's a good role model. Cool, yeah. And I'm doing my very best to be a great dad. It's a huge responsibility. It's the biggest responsibility that I've ever come remotely close to.
Yeah.
Becoming a parent. It's really changed me, Michael. It's been a real journey for me. And it's funny, as you get older, I don't know if you can relate to this, but as you get older, it becomes harder to kind of to grow. Do you find that learning new things and adopting new habits just gets a little bit more difficult?
Yeah, maybe it does get difficult at times.
Mm. And I used to be really good at it as a teenager, especially as a little kid. And now, you know, in my 30s, I'm getting closer to 40 and having this little girl, I've had to change so much. There's been so much about me and my behavior that I've had to grow out of. And so it's been a real journey, but I'm determined to be a really great dad.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. I congratulate you for it.
Thanks, man.
I hear that you have some big news. And then my next question was, can you tell us what that is? But I think you've already answered that.
is that about my daughter?
That's what I was actually implying to ask.
Yes. Yeah, that is by far the biggest news that I've ever had in my life is bringing a human being into the world. It's been wonderful. It's been the hardest thing I've ever done by far.
Yeah.
But also the most incredible thing I've ever done. And everybody says that, but
yeah.
But you don't know what that means until you actually do it. And I'm right in the middle of it right now.
At some point in the future, I do feel a little bit nervous about being a dad myself. I get nervous about it because of not only because of the responsibilities, but also because of the expenses as well.
Yeah, that's you're not wrong there.
I mean, sure, women make more money than they ever did 60 years ago, but there's still pressure on men to be providers because traditionally that's the man's job.
You're totally right. And you know what's funny? I consider myself to be a relatively modern and progressive person, but becoming a father, I've felt this huge responsibility to be a provider. It's just really come over me since this has happened, and it's a big priority for me, and it's just happened. It's been like an internal thing. It's like an instinctive thing that's kicked in for me to provide for my family.
Yeah,
it's harder than it seems, but you know, if you're going to be a good dad, you got to step up.
Yeah, of course, I would do my best, but I would also use my parents as a guide.
Absolutely, man. Well, they've already done it, you know, so who better to go to if you need advice?
Yeah, of course. I go to my dad for advice quite frequently.
And sometimes you can tell your parents something that they don't know because the world has changed an awful lot.
Well, my dad has a very 1980s mentality.
Does he?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I think my dad probably does too. My dad's probably got a 1970s mentality, actually.
Of course he does. I don't find that surprising one bit.
Yeah.
I do have to ask you my last question for you. Have you done many projects in the US?
Yeah, I did a few actually. I was lucky in the sense that I've always wanted to be in movies more so than TV. I love movies because it's a story that is more digestible. You know, you sit down for 90 minutes, 2 hours, and you get an arc from start to finish and you kind of get to watch an entire journey rather than TV, which can be sometimes 30 episodes. So I've always enjoyed movies in that sense. And I was lucky that I managed to get a few acting roles in movies, only movies. I never got any TV while I was in the States.
Really?
Yeah. And funnily enough, you probably won't like this, but all of the movies that I did were horror or thriller movies.
Yeesh.
Yeah. Well, actually, one of them wasn't. I lied to you. One of them was this beautiful faith-based film about a band. So that was not a horror film at all. That was a very wholesome film. But some of the others, one of the movies I was in, I got possessed and had all these horrible injuries and was like basically a zombie. Yeah, broken leg, Ish. All kinds of nasty things. Yeah, it was full on.
Compared to television series, films are done at a very rushed pace and there isn't a lot of time for character development or story growth. And you only get one story, one adventure. And with television shows, you can watch it whenever you want to. And it's, the show's done at a very more realistic pace. There's more time for character development and growth and developments on the story. And shows don't rely on the box office like films do.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's. I think I agree with you, actually. And I think that that's another reason why I like a good movie. There are a lot of movies that don't get it right. They don't have enough time. They haven't spent enough time developing the story or the characters. But a movie that gets it right and is able to tell a story that moves you in 90 minutes or 2 hours, that's really special to me. But a lot of them don't. And I agree with you. You know, it's cool to watch a TV series that goes on for a long time, and it can be a much more intense and much deeper adventure.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, now that you've answered my questions, I believe we're now have come to a point where you can ask me questions that you have in mind. We call it the Ask Mr. A Plus segment.
Okay. The Ask Mr. A Plus segment. All right. Well, it is a pleasure to be here with you, Michael. Thanks for having me, mate. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm actually, like many people, a very big fan of yours. I watched you on Love on the Spectrum, and I thought I'd tell you a little story. My wife and I watched you on the show while she was pregnant. And when we went to a birthing coach, because obviously giving birth is one of the most insane things a human can do. It's huge. And one of the pieces of advice that she gave us was, when you're going into labor, you feel like you're going to go into labor and the baby's about to come, you want to create an environment where you feel very loved up. And it creates a hormone in your body called oxytocin. And she said, so maybe put on some music or put on a TV show or a movie that makes you feel really happy. And the first thing my wife said was, oh, we have to watch Love on the Spectrum again. So right before, when she was 9 months pregnant, we're waiting for our little daughter to decide it was time, we were watching you on Love on the Spectrum and just having a great time. You know, that was our show to make us really happy. And especially you and your adventures on the show, man, you were a real light, and your openness about love and your pursuit for love. It's a really beautiful thing. You don't see that from many, many men these days. And it's really refreshing, mate. So I just wanted to, it's not really a question. I just wanted to commend you on that. And thank you.
Although dating is one of the hardest things that I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Because down here in Wollongong, there isn't that many single women.
Sure. Yep. Yep. And it's tricky, even if there are. I mean, it's hard work to try and get on the same page with another person. And it's so nerve-wracking. You've got to be vulnerable, which is very scary.
Oh, I also have to suggest something to you, if I may.
Hit me.
If in the event that your wife ever gets pregnant a second time and she's giving birth, may I suggest that you play that song, Push It? My Salt and Pepper.
That's amazing. You know what? I'm going to do that, Mike. I think that's red hot advice. And I think the trick would be to not say anything. Just put the song on. Just hit play really loud, and just you know, let her just feel the music and feel the sentiment of the song.
Yeah, of course,
we don't plan on having another child, but. That could be the turning point, actually. I think that's a great idea.
Nice.
Well, I was going to ask you about the documentary series. What was the filming? Like, how long were you filming that for?
We were filming for, like, quite a few months.
Yeah, and they would come to your house and follow you around?
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
How was that for you? It was got to be pretty weird having cameras in your face.
It wasn't
and in your
weird.
House.
I actually enjoyed it.
Really?
Yeah.
It seemed Loved you. It. You seemed quite comfortable.
Yeah.
A lot's changed in your life since then.
Yeah, it has.
You know what's interesting is, I don't know if you've ever. There's two shows that I think are polar opposites. There's one that's Love on the Spectrum, and have you ever seen a show called Married at First Sight?
I don't watch it, but I've seen clips of it.
Yeah, it's. I'm the same. I got to say, I watched a season of it once. I actually felt quite sick at the end. It was so full on. And it was so toxic. And just comparing Love on the Spectrum to Married at First Sight, they're both dating shows, but man, they could not be more different. And I feel like you were on the right side, mate.
Thanks. My parents raised me to be a gentleman.
Yeah, well, it shows. You've got that old school, chivalry.
Mostly thanks to my dad.
Yeah? He's got that 1980s mentality, doesn't he?
Yep.
He doesn't still dress like he's in the 1980s, does he?
No, he doesn't.
No. I mean, look, if I'm honest, I listen to a lot of music from the 1980s, so I guess I've got a bit of an 80s mentality.
Well, I watched something that was released in the 1980s.
Yeah? What do you got?
Thomas.
Thomas the Tank Engine?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... Have they done a new version of that?
Yeah, there's a reboot called All Engines Go, and it's terrible.
Is it rubbish?
Yep.
That's really sad. They've lost the essence of it.
Yep.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Ringo Starr was one of the voices.
Yep, it was actually the first one, but only for the first two seasons, which were both the only seasons from the 1980s.
Did he play Thomas?
He actually did all the voices. He was all the voices and the narrator.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's almost cooler than being the drummer from the Beatles.
I suppose it is.
depending on what you're into.
Yeah, that's right. Do you happen to have any other questions?
I think that's it, mate. I've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Oh, so have I. Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming on today's episode. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for reaching out to me on Instagram. That means a lot.
Oh, mate, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for chatting with me and spending your time with me. It's been great to get to know you, man. I hope we can hang out again. I would consider you a friend now, Mike. So I'll be chatting with you often and soon.
You know what? I think I'd like to consider you a new addition to my friendship circle as well.
Yeah, it's been a good chat, mate.
Really means a lot. Thank you.
My pleasure, Mike. Thanks for having me, man.
The pleasure's all mine. Thank you.